I'm speaking to Kofi Annan, the former Secretary General of the United Nations and chair of the Kofi Annan Foundation. Now, the question is whether you feel that the lack of optimism, if you like, the fundamental focus on security issues might undermine the SDGs as they come into force, or indeed fundamentally just eclipse them.
It's a very good question. We were lucky at the time of the MDGs, there was optimism. It was a turn of the millennium. And we use the accident of calendar very effectively to motivate and get people to do things. Today, the mood is a bit sour. We have a difficult economic environment. Growth is not what it should be. We have conflicts around us, from Middle East to Africa to Asia and Afghanistan. So when people feel prosperous and economically stable, they are much more generous and open and receptive to new ideas, and particular ideas that comes with that requires them to give, that asks them to do something. When the times are hard and they are focused on themselves or their communities, it's much more difficult. And of course, as you also point out, this whole security issue and suspicion of the other makes it difficult for people to relax and reach out. But this is where it becomes important that in this new sustainable development goals, it's not just the governments, it's not just the countries of the South, but it's a global demand. We hope the private sector will play a role. We hope the governments themselves will go back home and begin to implement it. The sustainable development goals are much more complicated, much more complex.
There's more of them.
More of them, I'd say, than the Millennium Development Goals, which were straightforward and simple, and we designed it that way. Mm-hmm. We put it in a simple language that a man or woman in the street in Delhi or Bogota or Accra will understand. Mm-hmm. And demand that their leaders implement it.
Bringing it back to the people.
People, getting the UN back to the people and getting them involved. Mm. And we have had some successes. I mean, the absolute poverty has been halved. And in fact, we did it 5 years ahead of scale. It is going to be much tougher with the SDGs. But having embraced it, I hope they'll go out and fight for it.
With me here in Dublin is Mohamed Yunus. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006, having successfully developed microfinance or microcredit in Bangladesh. What's your assessment of the Millennium goal of drastically eradicating that widespread poverty?
I always supported it right from the beginning when it was announced. I thought this is the best thing the United Nations ever did. It's the best thing mankind as a whole ever did to itself. These are very clearly defined goals. There are 8 in numbers and as a deadline, 2015. Then you can compare whether you are moving in that direction or not moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. Year by year, you can tell people whether you are in the right path or you are not on the path or above the path, whatever it is. So that's a fantastic thing as a set of goals. And if other fantastic goal is, other fantastic thing about this is all the nations of the world got together in New York City at the United Nations and declared this as the Millennium Development Goal. To all the countries to agree on such a beautiful set of goals is again a very remarkable accomplishment. And then we are following it up, who does what. And I'm happy that Bangladesh is very much at par with the progress to make the Millennium Development Goals happen. Particularly on the goal number one, this, achieving, reducing poverty by half by 2015. We are very much on the track right now. Mm-hmm. If European crisis didn't take place, financial crisis didn't take place, probably would be far ahead of the 2015 would have achieved that. But today still, with all those crises, all those difficulties that imposes on us because of the crisis in Europe and United States, still we are on track to achieve that goal. And on other goals, we are very well, except for one goal we are a little behind. That's the maternal mortality. So we have to work harder than we did before, so that even that can become an achievement. So a country which can achieve all 8 Millennium Development Goals, that's a kind of time for celebration for that country.
It is very much indeed. What's your assessment of elsewhere in the world outside Bangladesh? Many
Asian countries will achieve all 8 Millennium Development Goals, if not 7 of them for sure. But the problem is in Africa. Most of the countries are far behind, and it will be difficult to find one or two countries which will do all 8. There'll be 7, there'll be 5 maybe, but most of them will be 4, 5 and so on. Yeah. So that's not disappointing in the sense, at least now we know the progress in that, and then expedite the process so that we can catch up in the next Millennium Development Goals, and Millennium Development Goal 2, where all these would be enhanced and new goal would be set, new particular target date would be fixed. And we can continue to see momentum of this achievement and see who can achieve 8 Millennium Development Goals in which year.
The former President of Ireland and the former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Mary Robinson. The Millennium Development Goals, the 8 human rights goals that were established to be completed, to be achieved by 2015, are due to come to an end in a couple of years. And I just wonder how well we're doing here, because I know that it's been quite uneven across the world as to what countries have achieved these goals and which haven't. I mean, how do you see our achievements here? Do we need to be doing more?
I wasn't a total fan of the Millennium Development Goals when they began in September 2000 after the General Assembly. I was High Commissioner for Human Rights at the time, because they weren't framed in human rights terms and they left lots of gaps. At the same time, it is true that having the goals was important. And sometimes poor African countries thought they were set up to fail because a number of them won't achieve the health or the education or the equality goals, etc. But in fact, they have been a focus of a much wider public-private campaigning around education, around health, around reducing maternal and child deaths in particular. And we are seeing that the goal of having the world's poverty will probably be achieved. I think that's the one overall that will be achieved. But then there are countries within which it won't be achieved. Mm-hmm. So I think it's useful because we can measure to a certain extent. In Rio, we were discussing moving on, concentrating on the Millennium Development Goals until the end of 2015, and then moving to sustainable development goals. And I think we have to learn some lessons about where the gaps are. Mm-hmm.
With me today is Mark Malik-Brown. He's had a long and distinguished career. At the UN, he was Kofi Annan's right-hand man. The core of what we need to discuss today, which is the Millennium Development Goals. Yeah. You played a strong role in writing these. It was something that Kofi Annan really pushed hard. You said that they were rushed and they didn't lead to formal agreements. Now, the question is, if you were writing the MDGs now and you had more time, what would you add? What would be in there?
Well, I think the first thing to say is they probably wouldn't be as good, because that's not an entirely flippant remark. I mean, it's that, you know, precisely because they were done in a rather hurried way, without a sense of the historical importance that would quickly become attached to them. Mm. They were liberally borrowed from things that others had written before. But so, you know, we sort of were able to sort of borrow from that, add some things which weren't there, take, I'm sorry to say, some things out, which we just recognized we could not get through the UN by consensus.
Out?
Well, you know, the family planning stuff is fudged because of the conservatism that you would anticipate on that. Mm-hmm. We didn't have, you know, a democracy goal, because again, that would have been, you know, deeply resisted. Mm-hmm. But actually, you know, there is a strangely powerful call in the language around the MDGs, in the document, you know, as democracy being an enabling condition for reaching them. But perhaps more important than the process of how it was done was the times in which it was done, which in two ways were very different to now. The good thing about 2000 was it was a moment of great optimism about the world and the coming millennium. Mm-hmm. It was before 9/11 and Iraq. It was after the collapse of the Berlin Wall. There was a sense that we were embarking on a new era of global cooperation and stability, and everybody was going to get richer together. And you know, some people even foolishly declared history dead.
Halving poverty was a success, largely because of Asia. I could ask you about Africa, which is a bit more patchy. But what I do want to ask you about is the eighth Millennium Development Goal, which is a partnership for development, which is ostensibly about getting the rich to help the poor. And there were problems with that. And I'm just wondering if you've got views on what needs to happen in the SDGs to surmount those issues.
Yeah, I think there were problems with that. Lots of promises were made. Mm. As I've kept telling them, only promises which are kept are promises which matter. You don't bring people around year after year and make more promises that you don't keep. And I think the mentality, there's been a mental shift. The developing countries realize they cannot develop their countries with development aid. They have to rely on their own resources and their own abilities. And they have also opened up to private sector and private investment, which some were not at all receptive to in the past. And so there's a new dynamics. For example, we were talking yesterday, the question of transparency came up. I was in London talking to the British Prime Minister and ministers when they were chairing the G7 about the need to work together to ensure transparency, to try and stop the illicit flows coming out of Africa. Not only were they not paying taxes, but the governments were not seeing any of the investments that they thought was going to give them returns. By coincidence, this was also an issue on the agenda when they discovered that some of the big companies were not paying taxes and they were shifting headquarters around to avoid paying taxes. So there was a coincidence of interest. And we decided to work together. And I saw in the Financial Times today that they've come up with a proposal on how to tackle this illicit flows.
Yeah. And the OECD is pushing this very hard through BEPS, et cetera. And you would welcome that. You
very
think the tax havens issue is
and
a major
I had
problem.
Been with them. They even talked about preparing a cadre that will go out and help. Mm-hmm. What were they calling them? Inspectors Without Borders.
Right.
To go and do this. So I'm very happy to see that development. And I think what is important is both sides have a role to play.
Yes.
I would want to see a situation where the companies would publish their figures, that we came into country A and we paid X amount to the government, and the government confirms it and tells its people what it's doing with the money.